that test. Is that okay?
Shit, are we recording?
We're recording right
now. I asked you.
Well, we weren't recording then.
Oh, so it's your problem. Oh, so you wanted
at my discretion.
Oh, you are a little.
Lots of stuff to talk about. Keep texting. I'll fill.
Hold on. Let me
space.
Just finish this text.
I'll fill the space.
You got all sneaky on me.
You know, we released our first three episodes.
I did know that. Are you talking to me?
I'm talking directly to you.
Yeah, I
yes.
did know
did
that,
know?
But thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for reminding me.
And we've had some great responses. I think it's been really
Yeah, my family really
positive.
Likes it.
Yeah, your family likes it. All four people who have listened.
Yeah. Although I will say it did make me very aware. I'm not going to finish my text now because
no, finish
my
it.
Sister's just going to have to wait and who knows what's going to happen. It's all your fault. I'm not, I don't even have my notebook. I don't, you need to relax. Oh my gosh. Let me get set up and then the noise, you're going to be like, this one was so noisy. What were you doing?
Yeah. I told you not to have a concrete book, but you're like, no.
I insist. Concrete makes the best books. I don't know.
Concrete makes the best.
What, well, what are you doing over there?
What's that's the sound right of concrete.
Okay, listen.
Yeah.
We're very tired.
Oh,
wait, no, I'm sorry. I feel like you were going somewhere. Yeah, so we had three episodes.
Nope, never mind. It's gone.
It's gone? Okay.
But can we just real quick, because my story is kind of long tonight,
mm-hmm.
can we touch on the fact that today was the first day of scuba diving training for me? And guess who my teacher is? She's so attractive.
Tell me who that bitch is.
It's you.
It's me.
Amazing scuba diving teacher.
Oh, stop. The you're saying that because you're not done yet. You've got three more days.
I got three more days, yes.
So we'll really see how you feel if you get certified. We'll reassess.
The problem is I can't take my eyes off you. So
well,
I don't know how I'm going to get through the rest of the class.
Stop it. Come
just
on.
Over there telling people what to do and it's so
it's what I do.
Sexy.
Now take off your mask.
How you doing, though, otherwise?
I'm very tired.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how difficult not only learning to dive is,
mm-hmm.
it's very, I think, mentally draining as well as physical.
Right.
Physically.
Okay.
It's been a long day. But it's just, it's I feel like 10 times more that for me.
Really?
Just because, I mean, we're going to have 8 in the ocean. And I am responsible for making sure 8 people do not die.
Yeah.
And this ocean is dirty, it's cold, it's dark, there's strong currents, there's big waves. It's not easy.
Well, can I tell you that, you know, we were at the bottom of a 12-foot pool today.
We were.
And at one point, I looked up from the very bottom
mm-hmm.
and saw the surface, and I had this horrible thought. I'm like, this is what people see right before they drown.
Oh my God!
This is very morbid moment. But also very, I mean, that to me, drowning has always been this, like, the most terrifying way to die.
Really?
Absolutely. Because I remember watching this movie, White Squall.
Because you know you're going to die.
Did you ever see White Squall?
Who's in it?
Jeff Bridges, Ethan Embry, Matt
no.
Dillon?
Then no.
It's a true story about a group of boys on a ship, it's like a reform school or something, and this squall comes out of nowhere. And there's a very, it's stuck in my memory this entire time since I was maybe 10 years old of, and I don't want to ruin anything for you, but yeah.
Go ahead, I ruin your stories all the time.
A few of them are trapped below and the boat is capsized and they're literally waiting to die. And just that feeling.
Yeah.
Like
drowning or they're, it's cut off from the water.
They're
and
waiting.
They're gonna,
like it's slowly filling
oh,
up.
Oh, that would be
it's,
the worst.
It's like the Titanic, you know, when you see
yeah.
the mom like holding her kids in bed and the water filling up around them.
Well, there are stories like that too with diving, especially, it usually happens with like cave diving or wreck diving.
Really?
Where there's been stories where people don't realize they go into these wrecks and it's really difficult diving and they can't get back out. And there's been a few cases where the person knew they were going to die. And typically we carry dive slates
mm-hmm.
and they've pulled out their slates and they've written notes to their family
oh
members. And then they ran out of air and they drown. So sad.
So it's just them getting caught in the ship, like trapped in the ship.
Trapped in the ship, can't find their way out. Fuck. And it gets to a point where you realize, even if I get out right now, I won't make it to the surface.
How terrifying. Shipwrecks are in
130 feet of water.
But drowning is such
very
a...
very terrifying,
I mean,
yes.
Knock on wood, it'll never happen. But drowning is such a like a painful way to go.
I always thought being burned alive would be worse.
Really?
And I think maybe just because that's more unknown to me, where...
Being burned alive?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying with, like, drowning, not that I've almost come to terms with it, but I'm very aware every time I get in the water, mm-hmm. the risks I take. And, you know, people talk about shark attacks and all of that. I'm very aware I could die today. And I know that, and I'm still choosing to get into the water. You know what I mean? So...
It's a great hobby you're sharing with me. Yeah. And now I'm bringing you in.
Now you're going to drown too.
But
you know what I mean? Just because it's more in my life, whereas fire is still a very terrifying thing to me.
Right.
Because I'm not a fire breather. I'm not a firefighter. I don't deal with fire. So
I don't deal in fire.
In fire, like, with fire.
I feel like I remember, because, you know, I studied my morbid mind, loving the darker side of history. I've studied so many things about the witch hunts all around Europe and America. And when they would burn them at the stake, oftentimes they would either die of smoke inhalation first, or at least pass out.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would organize the pyre, the pile of sticks and all that kind of
stuff. I'm talking about being burned alive.
Right. I'm saying, like, they used to sometimes organize them, set it up so that the smoke wouldn't get to them. It would be the fire first. Terrifying.
That's twisted.
We're pretty good, humanity.
Yeah.
Pretty.
Well.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like it went... What?
We excited for tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I feel like it went really well today. It was a lot of fun. I'm very relieved you didn't suck.
Oh, thank you.
Because you were kind of...
I was very nervous.
You were nervous, and then it started making me nervous. Because you really? Well, you kept saying, like... What if I don't love it? And what if I'm really bad? And I was like, no, it's going to be great. And then I was like, oh shit, what if he really is terrible? Because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
People are terrible divers. People fail all the time. And failing, I don't think, would be as big of a deal. If you weren't super into it, would be a bigger deal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you fail, you can always retake what you didn't pass. But, like,
right.
I can't make you enjoy it.
You could try.
I could try. Yeah. And I will try.
Well, what do you got for us tonight? Anything? You got a story?
No. Was I supposed to?
Nah, you're good.
It's been a long day, guys. How many times have I said that? So the story, I'm not even ready because you started recording so quick.
I know.
Quick.
I'm trying to throw you off, but you just jumped right in there, not missing a beat.
Well, yeah.
Professional.
Profesh. Okay, so this one, obviously, I picked for you because we are diving.
This is a drowning one.
It's not a drowning one. I didn't want to be that mean.
Okay.
Next week is the drowning before we go into the ocean.
Perfect.
I'm saving that one. So right before we get into the water.
You don't want to be that mean. You want to be meaner.
I want to be meaner at the appropriate time where it made the most impact. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So this one is not really about scuba. It's more about, like, the ocean. It's about a ship.
Okay.
Okay. Ready for this?
Bom, 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 bom. Okay.
I'm not sure what just happened.
Y'all ready for this?
Isn't that a... Da, na, 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 na,
is that not what he did? Bom, 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 bom,
that's
bom.
Not what he said. Bom, bom, bom. I thought you were having, like, a banjo or something. It went a totally different direction.
That's the song.
Okay. Shh. Are you ready?
I guess I have to be.
This is the story of the Death Ship, also known as...
It's really terrifying when you do that. At the end of your ship.
I'm really wanting to enunciate this.
I like
for
it.
You.
Okay.
Thank you.
Death Ship.
Yeah. AKA the SS O-ring Medan.
The O-ring. It's a form of birth control, right?
All right. It's gonna be a long day.
It's gonna be a long day.
Like, you even know.
The O-ring, is that not?
Yeah. I'm saying O-ring. Oh, she rang. She rang me on the phone.
Did she?
She O-rang you about her nope. O-ring. Okay. Yep. Okay, it's the O-ring.
Okay.
Shh. Maydan, I guess. I'm not really sure. O-ring Maydan? Sure, let's go with that. So I got this information from mysteriousuniverse.org. Just so you know, I know you're wondering.
I like
wondering.
That's a .org.
Oh, it's profesh, oh, too. Yeah. Yeah. They're not fucking around. Also, real quick note.
Yeah.
How you said we did release the 3 episodes. I don't know why, but that's also the time I was like, oh shit, my family's listening to this. And I swear a million times.
A million.
Yeah.
We talk about some amazingly
yeah.
not
yeah.
family
No, I'm realizing
things.
That now, where I'm okay. like, oh yeah.
Hey, Nana.
I don't think my grandma's figured out yet how to listen to it. So I'm just going to kind of ride that
nice.
Wave a
nice.
Little bit longer. Maybe go back, edit. I know what we need to do.
What's
We're
up?
Releasing episodes to the public.
Mm.
We need to re-edit those episodes for Grandma and Grandpa.
Oh, it'll be like the parental advisory CDs and the
yeah,
Kmart
but we'll,
brand.
We'll just go through and...
Gotcha.
But I want the like voiceovers to be very obviously different.
Absolutely. I'd also like... Can
different
we do
backgrounds, different music.
Yeah.
Even different people. I'll have Crystal do my
nice.
My voices, so it's kind
That's
of
her
similar.
Sister, by
but
the way.
Yeah, my sister.
Can we also do what they do with TV movies when they swear and be like,
oh,
oh
yeah.
fluck.
Oh, duck.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure. We
oh,
will.
Okay,
we
perfect.
Will. Okay, here we go. June.
It's terrifying already.
1947.
Nice.
It's a clear, calm day on the water. As the American ship, the Silver Star, continues on its charted course, traversing the trade routes of the Straits of Malacca, located between Sumatra and Malaysia. The crew finally has a moment to relax and is taking in the sights when suddenly a call comes in on the radio. The simple Morse-coded transmission is as follows. All officers, including captain, are dead, lying in chart room and bridge. Possibly whole crew dead. While this caught the attention of all on board the Silver Star, what followed next was a series of indecipherable Morse transmissions, then a deafening silence.
Wait, hold on a second. I already have an issue with this. The ship with everybody dead called this other ship?
So listen, someone is the Morse code guy on the ship is the transmitting.
Oh, he's saying everybody else
SOS
is dead. Everybody
signal.
Else is dead. Okay.
So way to, now I know how you feel all the time. Before anyone had time to speak, one final message came through. I die.
Damn. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So a call on the radio revealed that another American ship in the area, as well as British and Dutch listening posts, had heard the distress call as well. The men at the post worked quickly to triangulate the signal, and it was soon pinned down as belonging to the Dutch freighter, the SS O-ring Medan. It was determined the Silver Star was the closest ship to the O-ring Medan, so the crew quickly changed course and headed for the freighter's last known coordinates. The water had grown choppy, but the Silver Star was able to catch sight of the O-ring Medan in just a few short hours. As the ship drew nearer, the crew could tell there was no sign of life on the freighter. It simply rose and fell with the water, following the path the wind pushed it. The Silver Star tried in vain to reach the SS O-ring Medan. After reviewing the scene before him, the Silver Star captain did the only thing left to do: assemble a boarding party. He gathered his strongest, most brave men and sent them over in a boat.
So these are guys going onto a ship where everyone...
They don't see anything. And the last thing they heard...
Is I die. It's a fucking monster.
So the boarding party had no idea what they'd find on deck. But that didn't stop them from making their way up. What they found was far worse than anything they had imagined. The dead bodies of the crew lay littered around the deck. Each with their arms grasping at something that wasn't there... Eyes wide open, faces twisted in horror. Even the ship's dog lay dead among the men.
The dog?
Yeah, it's very sad. Now on a mission to look for survivors, the boarding party made its way to the ship's bridge, where the captain's remains were quickly found. All about the wheelhouse and chart room lay the corpses of higher-ranking crew members, each in the same agonizing condition as the men on deck. The boarding party moved their search below deck, alert and ready for anything. With a false sense of bravado, they descended the staircase to the ship's lower level. The extreme chill stopped them dead in their tracks, and was in sharp contrast to the 110 degree outside temperature.
It's a ghost. Is it ghosts?
Once they had gathered the courage to continue.
Why are you laughing?
Because is it ghosts?
But is it ghosts?
Mm-hmm. The end, it was ghosts.
I knew it!
Once they gathered the courage to continue, their worst fears were soon realized.
Ghosts.
I really need a burp. We just ate dinner.
You really need to burp?
Yeah, that's their worst fears. We
crank
just
it
ate,
out.
We just ate so much food.
Well, I ate so much food.
You ate so much food. I ate a normal person's meal. What they found was more of the same. The dead bodies were still at their posts or in the boiler room, giving off the eerie feeling that the men had all died suddenly and within moments of each other. The boarding party searched for signs of danger, harm to the bodies, and even scoured the ship, looking for areas of weakness in the framework, but could find nothing that would explain the death of an entire crew. All that could be deduced was the fact that all the men had died in agony. The boarding crew returned to the Silver Star and reported their findings. The captain quickly decided that the best course of action was to tether their ship to the O-Ring Medan and tow it into the nearest port. The crew moved fast, safely securing the two ships together, the Silver Star strategically placing herself in front of the Medan. They slowly began the trek, anxiously watching the tow line and the freighter. They held their breath. Minutes ticked past. All looked well. Exhaling signs of relief and feeling safe yet again, thanks to the comfort of the Silver Star provided, they looked toward the port. While they didn't have far to go, the now rough waters and the strain of a freight ship severely impeded the journey. A crew member looked back to the tethered ship, something instantly catching his eye.
What?
But what?
Godzilla. I knew it.
Exactly what happened.
He lives in the ocean.
Does he now?
I'm next to SpongeBob. Under the sea.
Okay. I'm going to keep going. It looked like some sort of movement coming from the deck. Or, more specifically, the number 4 hold. He went to the ship's railing and peered at the SS O-Ring Medan. And that's when he realized he was looking at thick, black smoke. Smoke quickly started billowing out of the ship's lower hold areas, and as the smoke and fire crept toward the Silver Star, the captain ordered the tow lines to be cut.
No.
Moments after the last line was released and the Silver Star started to pull away, the SS O-Ring Medan erupted with a force so great it lifted itself out of the water. Before the Silver Star crew had time to react, the freight ship they had been towing only seconds ago started to sink. The stunned crew looked on as the ship slowly slipped beneath the surface, taking with it all evidence of its existence. Remains of the ship, as well as maritime logs that would prove of the SS O-Ring Medan's existence, has never been found.
We have to find it. We have to find it.
Now, many now. Believe this is a true story, okay. While others chalk it up to an old tale. What does exist, however, is the Silver Star, the ship that witnessed not only the death and destruction on board, but the ship's actual explosion. While no men from the ship have ever come forward to tell their tale,
really,
in May of 1952, testimony in the Proceedings of the Merchant Marine Council was published, which described Dutch crewmen stating, quote, their frozen faces were upturned to the sun, staring as if in fear. The mouths were gaping open and the eyes were staring.
Oh my
gosh. So some speculate the ship was attacked by a paranormal force. Others say the freighter was transporting poisonous gases.
That's what it seems like to me, yeah.
Yeah, and while others still say the SS O-Ring Medan never even existed. Unfortunately, we may never know the truth. I, for one, do think that the ship existed.
Okay.
And I do think it was carrying some sort of...
Toxic poison, yeah.
Gas that...
I mean, it would make sense.
Got released, because like that's the only agent. Thing that would kill everybody.
And then explode.
And also have them, like, be, like, twisted in pain like that. Right. If it's, like, a nerve gas.
Well, and then explode.
Well, yeah.
That's...
Although, not even the explode. I feel like so many things on a ship, especially back then, could cause an explosion. Yeah, but it would be weird that they wouldn't find something.
Oh, I just got chills.
While they were on board.
Well, I mean, being a giant history nerd, I know that in the late 1940s, mid to late 1940s and the early 1950s, there were a lot of ships that were, because the war and everything, there were a lot of ships transporting illegal, chemicals and that sort of stuff.
That's what a lot of people are saying, that it was an American ship that was using the Dutch freighter as like a cover.
Right.
And that. Yeah, it just, I don't know. I think it's very interesting, though.
It's interesting, and I can't imagine being, like, being one of the people who went on that ship. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, what a nightmare to see these men sprawled out, contorted in fear.
But that's the thing, too, that none of the men actually came forward. But this was testimony in, like, a very... professional, I don't know,
seems like an esteemed setting type.
Yeah, where, like, why would that even be brought up if it didn't exist? You know what I mean? And then if it was American ship found by an American crew, feels like that's something you move very quickly to cover up. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely. Hey guys, you didn't see any of this, so.
It's just, ugh. How terrifying. And I mean, assuming that it did happen, the men did go on the ship, saw the horrifying sight, but then as you're towing it back, probably not that much later, it explodes? Mm-hmm. Or you just, I was just fucking on that ship.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine. Also, I'd like to say from the bottom of my heart that I apologize for my SpongeBob comment. I'm very tired. It's not funny.
I know. We're just like so... I feel like we're beyond the point of exhaustion now.
Yeah. I think we complain about being tired every week, but...
Oh my gosh. My grandma put something on. She like shares posts. That's all she really does with Facebook.
Yeah.
But she put one on there the other day that totally made me crack up. And it said something like, I didn't realize until now that being an adult... meant you just tell other adults how tired you are, and they in turn tell you back how tired they are.
That like, is absolutely
pretty
true.
Much all I do That's all day long. So yeah,
true.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I remember being a kid and being like, I can't wait to be a grown up. So much freedom, I can do whatever I want.
It's the worst.
So much responsibility and yeah. You want to take the mic for me? Come on, be a pal.
We just went over how tired I was, and now you want me to hold this thing up.
I'd like you to hold it straight, if that's at all possible.
Why? Does that make a difference?
Absolutely. You don't know about mic straightness?
Oh, sorry. I immediately turned it over because this thing was like poking me in the finger. I was like, when is... Okay, just go.
Okay. Hey, guys. We're going to take a really quick break to tell you how you can get access to more than 500 horror movies and shows for free. Nothing. Nada. Zippo. Zilch.
Okay. Yep. That's right. We're talking about Screambox, a 100% fan-focused horror streaming service that you can view on your phone, Roku, Apple TV.
Or laptop, like we've been doing in bed.
Yep, we've been working our way through the Backyard Butchers category.
That's what's so cool about it. You select your main genre, supernatural, killers, monsters, etc. Then it takes you to subgenres like zombies, slashers, or home invasion movies, which I know you love.
Mm-hmm. It makes finding what you want to watch super easy. You can check out trailers, add movies to your queue, or just start watching. And right now, if you head to SOTWpodcast.com and sign up for our email list, you'll get access to a special 30-day trial. Absolutely free.
That's right. So go to SOTWpodcast.com, sign up, check out Screambox, and let us know what you like. Let us know what we should be watching.
Okay. Back to our stories.
So my story is called The House in the Woods.
Ooh.
Now, fair warning, this is a creepy one. This says, also, I haven't slept in a week, so it might not be creepy at all.
Yeah, okay.
So yep. I may have just thought that when I was writing it. So this story takes place in northern Minnesota, just outside of Duluth, in August of 1992. Yeah. Which means that I would have been very young. Very, very young.
You don't want to tell your age.
Anyway... So we're not starting our story where it starts.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, I don't want to anyway. We're taking it back to 1952.
That's when the something in my story happened.
That's correct. That's when the trial happened.
The trial. It was published. Yeah, yeah.
It was also when the Mr. Potato Head toy first appeared. And the musical, which originally was just a potato that you, they only sold the parts you stuck in.
You think it's so fascinating. I think it's amazing. You definitely told me this before.
They're just like, well, everybody has potatoes. What if we just made eyeballs and a pipe you can stick in?
I'm in.
I'm fucking genius.
Yeah.
And the musical Singing in the Rain premiered at Radio City Music Hall. Along with these happenings, Edward Elroy Johnston was also born in upstate Minnesota to Judith Johnston, a single mother and elementary school teacher. Judith loved her son, but reports state that she sadly had a bit of a mental break after his birth due to Edward being severely underweight, having a clouded left eye, and missing the middle and ring finger on his left hand.
Mm.
She blamed the world and its toxicity, claiming that it made her son a, quote, tiny monster that will never be loved or accepted.
Oh, yeah. God.
Nice mama. According to
I mean, I agree, but don't say it to his face. I'm just kidding. Oh, that's so mean.
That's so mean. According to what I read, she actually tried to be a really good mother. Or at least
she just called him a monster.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. She thought that she was trying to be. She loved Edward to a near suffocating degree.
When he I love you. Oh my god, wait, can we just really quickly talk about how cute you were in the pool today?
Why?
Okay, so we wear these vests and you have to inflate them. And what does this guy say? I don't know why, it just made me think of like this motherly love. He inflates his vest and it fills up around you to keep you floating at the surface. And he goes, it's like a hug.
It was like a real nice hug.
I've never heard anybody compare it to that. Sorry, continue.
Anyway. When he was seven, she let him enroll in a half-day preschool at seven.
Seven? Jeez.
And it was only after friends told her she was likely stunting the boy's social development skills that she did this. But much as she feared, he was instantly the sub... Wow. I'm tired. Instantly the subject of ridicule.
Wait, are you tired?
Should not. Should have used much smaller words for this. Judith pulled her son out after one day and began preparations to move from their town to escape the shame she was sure was coming. No one knew where they were going, but there were reports of seeing Edward sat in the back of his mom's station wagon sobbing as they drove away. Cut back to 1992. Walt, Joe, girl Joe, not boy Joe, Lynn...
Walt Joe? Oh, no, you're Walt, doing a list. I'm doing a list. Okay. Like, Walt Joe. All right.
You don't know the name Walt Joe?
Nope. Nope.
Walt, Joe, Lynn, and Zach, and Ian. I don't know why. Too many Ann's in there.
And Tom and Frank.
We're high school friends and members of a scary story club that would share books, poems, etc.
Shit, I want to join and they that found
club. Terrifying. It was in 1992.
They're so?
Probably not still. They were all around 17, 18 years old, except for Walt, who was 22, but had graduated only a year ago. Don't make fun of Walt.
I should have laughed. He's trying.
Walt
Joe.
Good job, Walt Joe. During one of their get-togethers, the rumor about the house in the woods was brought up. Supposedly, there was a vampire that lived out there. No one had ever seen him, but the story went that he would sneak into town at night and feed on the blood of freshly buried corpses. Nearly all of them knew that it was BS, but Walt seemed strangely removed as they built upon each other's bits and pieces of this nocturnal freak. When pressed, he said that he once saw the house. When he was a kid, he said it was white with peeling paint and blood-red grass. There were corpses strewn from the trees, he said. He didn't sleep for months after seeing it. There was a pause, then a calling of bullshit. The group ragged on him for trying to scare them, but Walt swore he was telling the truth. Joe told him to prove it, to take them there. Walt said he didn't remember exactly where it was, and even if he did, he was never going back. They called him a liar, kept giving him shit until he stormed out. Now Lynn, a pretty 18-year-old with dark hair and big doe-like eyes, went after him. She said he was crying when she found him. She tried to comfort him, but they were quickly interrupted by Zach, who offered Walter $100 if he took them to the house. Apparently, Zach had come from money and was never shy about showing it off.
Ugh, Zach.
Yeah, fucking Zach.
Jeez.
Now, Walt was pretty broke, so he agreed. Apparently, he knew exactly where this place was after all, but he made them promise they'd just go to it, not fuck with it. Everyone agreed.
Mm.
So the next day, they left around 4 p.m. The sun normally stays up till about 9 o'clock in the summer, and Walt said it was a 90-minute...
Nine?
In Minnesota, yeah.
Jeez.
8:39. Get hit. And Walt said it was a 90-minute walk, so they figured they'd have plenty of time. They headed into the woods on the outskirts of town. Have you been to Minnesota, ever?
No.
Don't say it like that.
Why would I have ever been to Minnesota?
It's the nice state. Minnesota nice? Never heard that?
No.
Cool. So, I assumed you would say no. I want to tell you the woods are very thick. They're the kind that once you're in, you're in. And I remember being up there because I spent some years growing up in northern Minnesota in Chisago. Don't make that face. Chicago with an S.
Yep.
They were the kind that once you got in, you're in. I remember being up there and hearing so many stories about hunters getting lost and dying because they couldn't find their way back.
Jeez.
In fact, we had to take orienteering classes in junior high and high school.
Oh, I want to do that.
It wasn't like a class with, like a science class with orienteering. It was actually an orienteering mandatory class.
I want to do that.
All right.
I'm making you do that tomorrow with a compass. Okay, making you do the same thing, just in water now.
Anyway, so these five kids go into the woods and are quickly swallowed up. At first, it's fairly light, with beams of sun breaking through the canopy with ease. But as they go deeper, they start to notice that the trees seem to bend in more, to bow and build bridges with their leaves.
Oh my god. You're such a writer.
Stop it.
Oh, you're adorable.
I don't want to read the next line.
Oh, yes.
To block the sun and cast a dwindling trail in a gray hue that made it seem like permanent
dusk. Oh my god! My point has just been made. Man, no, I'm into it. I love it.
Before they knew it, the trail was gone. Walt insisted he knew where he was going, but the others doubted him. Lynn was getting nervous and actually asked to go back a few times, but Zach, Ian, and Joe wanted to press on. Luckily, or rather unluckily, it wasn't much further. At first, they didn't notice it. They didn't know why Walt had stopped walking. But then he pointed through the maze of trees to a dilapidated white house. It looked like an old farmhouse that had been overrun by the forest, ivy crawling up its peeling sides, branches draped across its roof, side gutters that had been bent from years of leaves pressing on them. Some windows were broken, and beware of dog signs were nailed to nearly every tree surrounding the home.
Hmm.
But there didn't seem to be any dogs.
Put all those up at my grandparents' house, too. They don't have a dog. Put them everywhere.
The group was silent, lost for words. Walt wanted to go back. Lynn agreed. Even Ian was on board with not getting any closer. But Zach pushed, and Joe backed him up. They talked most of their friends into joining, into exploring the clearly abandoned home, but not Walt. He refused. He said he would wait right there, but he wasn't going in. The group approached. Zach, Ian, Lynn, and Joe. Lynn would later report that Zach's disposition quickly changed when stepping into the clearing that embraced the house. His foot squished down, and from the earth rose dark water. Now, it had recently rained, so Zach brushed it off as mud, but Lynn said they all saw the crimson stain the mud had left on his white shoes. They moved closer, joking and teasing each other in an effort to freak each other out, as friends do, and while there were no corpses hanging from trees, as Walt had told them there would be, they did notice several animal skulls strewn across the yard. Mm. Never a good sign. Mm. I like that you were like, "Aw, those poor animals."
Oh, animals.
Sure, it was natural causes. The door was locked. The knob wouldn't turn. But it was so old and uncared for that dirt had filled the latch and kept it from properly locking, so it pushed right open with a loud creak. Zach was the first inside, followed closely by Joe and then Ian and Lynn. The latter said there was an instant and overwhelming smell, like chemicals, almost sour, is how she described it. She said it stung her eyes. The house had a small mudroom with light wood floors that were darkened by years of filth. Straight ahead was a door with two rooms off to either side. One was a living room, and on the other side, a dining room. "Hello?" Zach shouted to no one. Ian jumped, causing their leader to laugh nervously, as if trying to hide his fears. Joe opened the door straight ahead and saw just pure darkness. It led into a basement, and she sure as shit wasn't going down there. She quickly rejoined the others in the living room. Now, this room was big, with hazed light pouring through the tall windows and catching a bit of dust. Catching the dust the group was kicking up as they moved through the moaning floor. Wow. You've got me, like, all...
discombobulated. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, wow. Do you think that Mike picked up my hip cracking?
Yes, it was very loud.
It was really loud.
Anyway, so they were walking, and the floorboards were moaning. At one point, Lynn reported that they stopped, but the creaking didn't until a moment later.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. That's so creepy.
Yeah. She wanted to leave, but Zach said no. He wanted to see the kitchen to figure out what that smell was. Now, the living room and dining room reconnected in the kitchen, which was at the far end of the house. There was a door between the living room and the kitchen, and the creaking had made everyone very nervous about entering, which Zach, of course, being an asshole, played into. They let their tension rise as his hand rested on the door, waiting to push. Their hearts raced as Zach asked what they'd do if someone were on the other side of the door.
Oh, God.
If it was the vampire, noting how the sun didn't directly reach the house. Finally, Jo had had enough. She moved to shove the door open when bam. I'm not screaming it anymore because I feel like that was too much in the first episode. My sister calls me Bam Bam now.
Nah, you're Bam Bam. That was pretty funny though.
So the loud sound had come from behind them. Everyone jumped. Lynn looked at Ian. The front door, he said. They scuttled toward the entrance, all wary, even Zach, and stopped. Chills shooting up their spines, they saw a woman at the door. Standing, peering outside, hand near the knob, but not touching it. She was wearing a flowered dress, and her hair was tied up behind her head. The dress seemed old, as did the hairstyle. But that wasn't really a concern at the moment. The group was silent, no one knowing what to say. They'd clearly broken into some woman's home, and finally Lynn spoke up, saying, "Ma'am?" No answer. And that's when they realized she wasn't moving. At all. Ian pointed to her back foot, which had a metal rod entering it from a circular stand on the ground, like she was a mannequin. "Shit, it's Walt. He's fucking with us," Lynn reported that Zach said.
Because he went back and grabbed the mannequin he had secretly stashed in the woods the night before and then went in and threw it on the goddamn front door? Get your shit together, kids! Doesn't make any sense!
I think they're just panicked, yeah. Regardless, Lynn looked outside. Walt was still in the woods, sitting, waiting, patiently. "It wasn't Walt," she whispered. That's when Joe moved around the woman's head and saw her face. Saw that it wasn't a mannequin. She was real. She was a corpse. And she was smiling. Both sides of her mouth had been pinned to her cheeks. Her eyes were wide, and her skin was coated in what was described as amateur makeup. Joe's breath was stolen. It took her a moment to scream. When she did, Zach leapt for the door, ready to leave everyone behind.
Of course.
But it was locked. Truly locked. What hadn't latched earlier had now been shoved with enough force to stay shut. It wouldn't budge. The group turned and bolted back toward the kitchen, thinking there had to be some escape, some back door. As soon as they stepped foot into the room... fucking car! I don't know if you guys heard that. There's a very loud horn.
Traffic.
As soon as they stepped foot into the room, they froze. There were more human dolls. Men, women, children, sitting around a table with rotted food in front of them.
But they hadn't seen any of this before.
They hadn't gone into the kitchen.
Oh, they're in the kitchen now. Okay. Yeah.
Their mouths were all pinned in ghoulish grins. Their eyes all wide and terrifying. "Go out the window," Ian yelled. Zach went to throw it open, but it was painted shut. He grabbed a rolling pin covered in cobwebs and reared back to break the glass. But then... one of the dinner guests moved.
Oh, shit.
He pounded up over the table. What they thought was a child was actually Edward. He lunged at Zach with his butter knife in hand and stabbed him in the neck. Horrified, the others ran. No one tried to save Zach.
Well, yeah, it's Zach.
They were lost in the moment, lost to the fright, just reacting. Ian bolted through the dining room, Joe on his tail, Lynn headed back into the living room and to the door where they'd first entered. She pulled with all her might, but it wouldn't budge. She was trapped, sobbing, cracking. She heard Joe screaming, then Ian. Lynn rushed toward the living room window, planning to throw herself out, but she accidentally slammed against her friend. Ian's body knocked her backward. She looked up and saw that he was covered in blood. A sharpened stick then burst through his body. It was a tree limb that had been whittled to a point. It screamed through his chest and sprayed blood across Lynn's face. Ian dropped. Behind him was Edward, not even 5 feet tall, thin as a piece of string. He spoke in a high-pitched voice that Lynn would later describe as sounding close to Mickey Mouse. And he had a smile that spanned from ear to ear. "You're not smiling," he said. "You have to smile, or people won't like you." That's when Lynn blacked out. She didn't come to until she heard police sirens. She said she remembers waking up in the basement with flits of red and blue dancing over the narrow basement windows. It was enough light for her to see Joe, stripped naked in a basin. Her skin had been peeled back, and some of her organs had been removed. Her head rested against the metal tub, and her lips were already pinned into a smile. Police stormed the house. Walt had gotten them after hearing the screams coming from inside. They never found Edward, but they did find the remains of his mother in the basement, sat in a shadow-draped chair against the wall, watching her son pump chemicals into his flayed victims to preserve them, and then drive metal rods through their bodies to pose them, and finally using diaper pins to hold their mouths in the shape of smiles. He wanted friends, a doctor would later say in an interview with the Star Tribune, Minnesota's leading newspaper. My voice has been cracking a lot lately.
Yeah, like a lot.
I'm regressing. He wanted people to like him. No one knows if Edward's mother started the murders, and I guess you would call them taxidermy practices of some sort, or if it was something Edward did after his mom died out of loneliness and fear of interacting with the real world. But they found 12 human dolls around the house, 2 dogs outside, and a trash can in the back containing the bones of at least 18 different people, dating back to the mid-70s. And that is the story of the house in the woods.
Nope.
What do you think? Do you have any safety pins?
Oh, Jesus.
What? That's a fair question. If you're planning on killing
me. Safety pins, yeah. Diaper pins, no.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's different, yeah. It's funny, though, because he said, "You're not smiling. Mm-hmm. You should smile." I fucking hate when people say that shit to me all the time. No, men say that shit to me all the time.
You should smile more.
You'd be so pretty if you just smiled. And you I usually respond with, "Fuck off."
Do you say it with a nice smile, though?
No.
Okay.
It's like such a rude thing. Absolutely. I feel like to say to a person, and I'm not here for your pleasure, so.
Way to take my story and just.
No, I'm just saying it's like. But I don't know. It's so creepy. How did you find this?
This one was actually recounted to me. I had found the story when I was in college and shared it with a friend who had listened to our podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My friend from Chicago, Rachel, I told her about her. And she was like, "You should tell them the story you told me when we were in college."
You just didn't remember that in the story? Yeah.
I completely forgot about this story. Because, you know, I'm much more into like ghosts and monsters now than I am into murder. But
yeah,
but it's a twisted one.
Yeah.
So if we ever go to Minnesota, I'll take you to Duluth and show you the woods.
Okay.
See if the house is still there.
Well, I'm ready.
See if Edward's still hanging around.
Sounds like a fun guy.
I'll bring my own diaper pins.
I'll just smile. I'll be fine. Just, yeah. It's going to be all good. If that's all you need. Well, I don't know. I should practice a little bit.
You should.
Smiling all the time.
You do. I mean, I don't want to sound like a male chauvinist asshole, but you do have a gorgeous smile.
You stop.
You said stop before I even got it out. You knew what was coming.
Thank you.
Guys, who are listening, and girls. I say guys is a universal.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't roll your eyes at me. I really, you know, I'm so happy you guys are listening in whatever capacity, wherever you are. But I will say that we are about to indulge in some ice cream after we record this podcast.
Shit. We almost got three different
cookies. Yeah, exactly. And I hope that after you listen to this podcast, you'll indulge in some ice cream as well. And it'll be like we're all having ice cream together.
Okay, all right. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit here. You're getting a little too emotional for me.
Very emotional day.
Yeah, it's been a rough one. But wow. Well, that was... I really liked that one.
Did you?
That might have been my favorite story of yours.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
And I
that.
Didn't ruin it once.
I mean, you did stop at like a quarter of the way through to talk about me in the vest, but...
Yeah, but that's different. Okay, yeah, that's different. I'll just do all my commenting at the top.
I like it.
Guys, obviously, we're very exhausted. It's going downhill fast. But follow us on our social media pages. You can find all that information on our website.
What's our website?
SOTWpodcast.com.
That was fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've been updating it a lot.
For those of you who could not understand that, it was SOTWpodcast.com.
Oh, that was so much more clear. Thank you.
You can also check out our Patreon page.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/SOTWpodcast.
See, I don't know that one, so.
Well, it's on our website as well. You can find a link to it.
Yep. It's a good hub for all you need to know. Falling asleep literally mid-sentence now.
The mic's slowly like tilting forward.
Yeah, and we got a big day tomorrow. We're back in the pool for more diving.
Yes, absolutely. Very excited.
On that note, good night.
And sweet dreams.